Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. I grew up in the greater Seattle area and have lived in the Pacific Northwest my whole life. There is a wonderful, vibrant music scene up here with an incredibly welcoming community. And growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast will explore the Northwest music scene, how to navigate it, the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. This is Made for Music. All right, welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast comes from an extremely musical family, growing up on Jeff Buckley, Radiohead, Manchester Orchestra, and the music of his family. This guy got started on bass guitar, took up the saxophone in grade school, and has since graduated to the guitar. And so he moved to Seattle from Wisconsin back in 2013, where he joined his brother's band Faintly. They renamed the group to Among Authors and released their first album back in August of 2017. Please welcome the man striving to open a venue by 2020, Jason Ketterer.
That's a mighty intro. That's hilarious. I don't know if I can actually say I can play all those instruments. Definitely not anymore, that's for sure.
You know what's funny is I actually followed a very similar path as you, except I started on piano, went to clarinet and saxophone.
Nice.
Cannot play.
Dude,
I have
that
no
sucks.
Idea. Yeah.
I love the clarinet. Like, I want that in some of our music. Like,
yeah.
We've been talking about it, but...
Yeah, I have no idea how to play.
Damn.
I mean, I probably physically could, but I couldn't tell you what notes. What?
For sure. No, yeah. I mean, I could never do that. I just kind of listen to the person next to me and, like, play it along.
Right on.
Read it. But...
Yeah. And the same thing, guitar, and then that was it, just off with the guitar. And I can play some very sloppy keys.
I can't play any at all. It's really pathetic, actually. Like, and there's that one Radiohead song that, like, well, I don't even know what the hell it is. I'm not going to sing it. It's a bad idea. But, like, it's just, like, three notes, and I can't play it ever. Like, I can never do it. Like,
yeah.
That's how bad I am at fucking keyboard.
Yeah, it's tough though. I think it's the best. I'm glad I did play because it's the best way to visualize music.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you were to be like, go play this song, I'd be like, cool. Well, I guess if we take it all the way to the beginning, you noted before we hopped on here that you had a pretty musical family. So when did you decide to jump in and try your hand at it all?
So I do have a very musical family. I am most likely the least musical of the people in my family. So I guess let me just throw out who's in my family. My mom, my dad, three sisters, and my brother, Ian. I'm in Among Authors with Ian. He plays piano, and he sings, and he writes all the lyrics, and he writes most of the main melodies of the songs, basically, and a lot of other stuff, too. We had a family band just growing up the whole time. I was never in it. So Ian actually played trumpet. My sister Tara played saxophone. And then they both sang backup vocals. My sister Alicia played drums. Sister Julia played keyboards and flute and also sang. And then my mom played bass and my dad played guitar and sang. At some point, there was another guitar player who was actually... someone dating my sister Julia, but that was like when they're in high school. Like, this goes back forever. And yeah, so I just followed them around and like pretended to hook up chords and like with a flashlight looking at stuff, making sure it was all perfect. But I was never in the band. I was like the roadie because I was like 9.
Are you the youngest?
I am the youngest. Yeah. Everybody's basically 3 years apart, I think. But yeah, so it was kind of a rule in my house that you had to play something, like when you're of age to be able to do that. Well, I guess, hold on, let's go back a little bit. So
rewind.
I played, what I wanted to do was play bass because I saw my mom playing bass. So I saved up over a course of, I think a year, maybe two, I don't actually remember. And I did that by doing chores, or my grandpa at the time would give like 50 cent pieces out just because he had tons of them all the time. And my parents said, okay, if you save up $100, we'll throw in 100, get you a cheap bass.
Oh, mm-hmm. Right on.
You can learn to play that way, which was awesome because it also taught me how to like deal with money at like a young age.
Right.
So I actually did it, saved up, played bass. The first thing I learned how to play was like a Wishbone Ash song, which is ridiculous. But I don't, never, not all the way through. When there was school band, which was like in sixth grade it started. I had to play an instrument, was forced to. Right. So I picked up saxophone. Hated it. Hated every minute.
Really?
In school band. I like saxophone, like, it's cool, yeah. But like, I have to wear uniforms. Like, what is that? That's terrible. I mean, it's the same way I feel about jobs. If I can ever not, like, ever again, not have a job where I have to wear a uniform, like, that's success.
Yeah.
Like, I'm into that. Anyways, yeah, I played saxophone until like eighth grade, and then I decided I hated it and refused to sign up for band again. And then my mom got mad and grounded me from my skateboard for the whole summer, which sucked.
Brutal, but you stuck it out. You held out.
I think I may have snuck my skateboard out like once or twice.
Is that when you decided to move to guitar, or was there kind of a latency? No.
No, not. So I never decided to move to guitar. There was always a guitar sitting like by the couch, an acoustic guitar. And then eventually there was some weird stuff with like Faintly kind of broke up, and I called Ian. I'm like, I think I can probably play some stuff, and like, if you want to make music again or whatever. He's like, all right, we'll move out here. So I did. And that's kind of how I actually started playing guitar, is basically in the band.
Nice.
So yeah, learning as you go.
That's cool. So how long, so Faintly was based here then?
Faintly started in Wisconsin, and that was Ian and Justin Regner, who was a bassist, and at the time Dale Tikkanen was a guitar player, and his brother played drums for a second, and then also Ian Legal played drums in it or whatever for a little bit. But Ian and Justin had decided to push the band, and so they wanted to move to Seattle. So they moved to Seattle. Dale didn't come along, or the drummer at the time didn't as well, which I don't remember who that was. And that, I think they picked up Mark, who was a drummer, and played with him like almost right away. Nice. And they also convinced John Livingston, who is now the guitar player in Among Authors, to move up from Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, Seattle to play with them.
So I went to school. That's awesome.
Oh, nice.
Good ucks. So it was like the band that was bringing these people to Seattle, though. It was like, let's push the band in Seattle.
It was Faintly. Push the band. Then that ended up kind of breaking up because of personal stuff, whatever, like creative differences, if you want to use that term. And then Justin ended up moving back to Wisconsin, and John stayed. And at the time, Ian kind of like was like, dude, let's just cancel the whole thing. Like, I don't want to deal with it anymore. And then I moved back out there. John came back, and then Mark also came back for a little bit. I don't know how much you want to go timeline.
It's up to you.
Like, there's so much. Yeah, it's so like convoluted.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot going on, but I know a lot of people go, hey, I'm trying to make it. I'm going to go to LA, or I'm going to go to Nashville. So what was it about Seattle that y'all were like, this is the place where you want to be?
So I think there was a few things. Ian and his wife took a trip to Boston before they moved to Seattle. There was an idea to move there that didn't work out for whatever reason, or just didn't make sense. They also looked at Austin, if I remember right.
Nice.
But that, from pictures, looks kind of like Madison, Wisconsin. So they didn't want Wisconsin
again. Same old.
Right? Kind of just flat and cool city, probably. I haven't been there myself. I'm sure it's great. And I also think they had kind of this vendetta against LA, because a lot of people hate LA before being there for a little bit. I think it's easy to.
And so you were there as well. So that's kind of funny. Like, You were,
yeah.
When you were in LA, were you doing music or was it just living in LA?
No. So my sister lived in LA at the time and I called her up. I'm like, can I come live with you, please? Like, I need to get out of here. She's like, absolutely. So like 2 weeks later, I just picked up and moved to LA. Didn't have a job for a while and eventually started doing like web design stuff like for friends. And nice. That's now my job is I'm a web designer. So that's nice. Probably the best decision I made was to move to LA. But I only lasted a year and then I moved around a bit again.
So do you do web stuff for the band as well? Has that translated into music then?
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like that's a great
It helps.
Asset to have. Yeah.
It helps a lot. Like any of the online marketing stuff, like if I don't know how to do it, I know someone who knows how to do it. So
right.
And I know a bunch of people who do stuff that can help promote or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is a really nice asset. Yeah, we do everything on WordPress.
Oh, really?
I'm a big WordPress proponent, but I don't know. People don't like it because it's not safe or whatever, but yeah. I think it's fine.
Are you doing like custom like HTML, CSS on it?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So you came back up to Seattle and you mentioned that. So how did it go from Faintly to Among Authors? You've had, obviously a lot happened and it was, this project's done.
Yeah.
And I think you'd said to me as well that Among Authors was a compilation of like 10 years of songs or something.
Yeah,
like
definitely. I mean, they're like, none of them are Faintly released songs. So there is, there's some music that Faintly released. None of those are redone for this.
Right. This album is just different projects.
Right. But a lot of the songs, or at least some of them, have definitely started when Faintly was a thing. Actually, all of them started when Faintly was a thing because I was still kind of in it when Faintly was a thing. But they go back a long ways. The song Overture, which is, I think, the last song on the album, is probably 10 years old. Like, it's, it's forever. And there's another song that we wanted to put on the album that's also like 10 years old, and we just couldn't finish it. I just still can't finish it. Don't know how to finish the song at all. Like, just terrible.
Yeah. But is it like on the doc, like if you do another release, is that song, are you going to try and find a way to get it on there?
Absolutely.
Right on.
Until we do, that song's going to try to get on everything.
Cool. How often do you all collaborate? And I feel like there's this, I got excited about your band because I'm in a band with my brother, so I felt like, I was like, I have a bond with those guys. but from songwriting, do you feel that has an impact on the writing process?
Yes.
Or how things come together?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's kind of obvious when we're in studio trying to write stuff that Ian and I often are like looking at each other and like knowing, okay, don't play that note or whatever, kind of without saying anything. It's funny, like when we started actually recording this album and when I was in it, when I first started in the band, I didn't know how to write anything. Like everything I wrote was terrible. Thankfully, we used none of it. and then like halfway through like making the album, I feel like I can write stuff now. Like I get it. Like there's, and you actually have to think of what you're playing. You can't just like play notes. I don't know. A lot of writing is just being humble to other people telling you that your stuff sucks.
Do you find it's easier to be told that or say that to your brother?
I mean, very rarely does anyone take anything super offensively in our band.
That's awesome.
Hello.
I scared the hell out of Windows update loud. Just came through.
That's not hilarious. Supposed to happen. Dude, that always happens in the worst time ever.
like, what's going on?
Yeah, we don't really have a lot of drama in like their writing atmosphere of our band at all. We tend to play a lot of different parts and continuously do it and like record them on our phones and just constantly do that. And eventually we'll get something that works. And then we change it anyways when we actually record the song. So like nothing, we're not married to anything for the most part. There's little parts maybe, but.
You said you're using your phone, using like voice notes or.
I don't know what I use. I have no idea. There's some app I use on my Google phone.
I didn't even discover, I mean, I've had an iPhone for who knows how long, but I didn't even discover like just the voice memo feature in that alone has saved ideas so many times.
Yeah, for sure.
it used to be that I would just carry around pencil and paper, and even while I had a phone too, and I didn't think to like, oh, I could take a video and sing into the video or something mm-hmm. like that. I would try to map out on paper
like the
what
notes.
I was trying to do. Yeah.
Like, do you know music theory though? Like, can you do that?
Not well enough to okay. be like, this is going to be a Mixolydian. I could bar it out and I knew sure. like what notes I was hitting and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's
but
cool.
I digress. Voice, I feel like that's huge. Like,
oh, for sure.
The phone, like just recording ideas into your phone and just iterating over and over and over to get like the best quality product.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I probably have 2 hours of crap.
Is it like mostly guitar parts or melodies or what is it that you tend to record or ideas that come up
so,
with?
When we're in like our practice or rehearsal or whatever you want to call it, if there's anything it remotely cool or whatever to something someone's playing, someone's going to record it. And we just all kind of have our phones out. What often happens is we'll record something like kind of as a full band. And then one of us will be like, I just want to record like my guitar part with the piano. Like, let's play that quick. So then we'll get that. There's so much of that going on all the time.
Yes. So is it pretty jam oriented with you guys?
I mean, it's changed. I think the first album, a lot of it came from me, and there's a little bit changed now. Some of us are bringing a little bit more to the table as far as starting the song goes. It's still usually not like a super intense like chord progression or anything, but it's some type of a melody that then Ian will jump on and be like, all right, well, here's a normal chord progression. What weird chord can I stick here to make it not sound so boring?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the process is working right now.
Cool. Well, that was one thing I was going to ask. I was actually bringing your guys' stuff up, and like some of these songs, what I was noticing when I was listening through is like, some arrangements are like 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So
I know.
With this process, is it just keep going, or do you have any sort of structure, or is it, let's just see where the song takes us and go?
Both.
Yeah.
I mean,
totally fair.
So like Imitation House is the song that we released a video on. That's not really a pop structure, but in the same way, it felt like kind of the most commercial song. Mm-hmm. Like there's not really a chorus in it. It just kind of builds and then it's over, which is fine. But I guess, yeah, I don't know if we had a like exact structure to let's do verse chorus or whatever it is. What is it? What is a song supposed to be? It's something like,
it's like
verse
AABA or something. It's like verse chorus bridge chorus pretty
yeah.
much.
Okay. Which I mean, there's a reason why it works,
yeah.
right? I mean, it may, like everybody can relate to it. We definitely do that. I don't think we try to, but a lot of this stuff is there anyways.
Yeah, a lot of time it just happens naturally because
yeah.
it's what you hear.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
But I was just curious because is it Lure that's 8 minutes?
Lure, I think it's nine, but nine. It might be eight. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so I remember listening. It's a beautiful song.
Thanks.
And it doesn't get, what was interesting about it is it doesn't get boring, because that's hard to do.
Thank
some
you.
People just
that's
keep
awesome.
Writing and writing and
mm-hmm.
you're like, all right, I'm kind of done. I actually
yeah.
like a lot of music that tends to run longer than the 3.5-4 minutes or whatever. I also get, I almost get weirdly uncomfortable actually if I hit like 3 minutes to 3.5. I'm like, what
yeah.
did I miss? And my buddy
that's
Aaron will be like, you need to calm down. The song's done.
Sure.
I'm like, but it's only 3.5 minutes. Like, that's the sweet spot. I'm like,
I mean, if that's right for that song, it is a sweet spot. Like, I mean, there are a lot of people who are really good at that, and those songs don't seem short. Like, they
True.
Seem great.
They seem complete.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. like Arctic Monkeys. Right. They,
yeah.
every song is like 2.5 minutes and
right.
it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like they don't seem short at all. So I don't know if we could ever do that, but
yeah.
yeah.
Well, I think it takes a lot of craft on either side, whichever direction
mm-hmm.
you go. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I was just curious if that was.
Yeah. I can't say there's too much of that. I think the most conscious thing we do is we end up with like something that seems kind of like a normal song, and then we try to throw something weird in it just for whatever, whether we throw that out or we keep it, like let's try to mess it up a little bit and see what comes from that. That seems to be a relatively consistent thing that we do for sure.
That's pretty cool, and it gives you kind of that unique edge.
Sure.
As far as like crafting your own sound, because if that's like the one thing you're like, we are going to do this every time, or, you know, we're going to make sure that it's not too cookie cutter or whatever.
Yeah.
It helps you kind of, that'll morph eventually into something where you'll be able to say, this is what we do. Actually, I say that, but I don't know if I could actually tell you anything that I do.
Someone else can, like, that though.
But yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, I have a friend that comes to like every show, and after every show, he comes up to me and be like, oh, did you guys change this or blah, blah, blah? And like, he's a computer programmer. So he's super analytical, and he just knows exactly like what the stuff is that we're doing. Half the time, I'm like, we didn't try to change that. We just screwed it up. And that's how it is now.
It's like when they tell you, oh, the audience won't know if you mess up. It's like, no, this guy knows.
Yeah, he knows. He doesn't always think we messed up though. Sometimes he thinks it's on purpose, which is good.
Yeah. You pulled it off.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know where I was even going with that, but he's interesting that way. It's funny you mentioned Lure, because that actually, the structure we have in that is like verse, chorus, but the chorus is kind of more of a, or the verse is kind of more of a chorus, if that makes sense.
Yeah, as far as melody is concerned.
Yeah, and it's just, we call it the Boris because we're idiots. But that's how we like wrote it down on our chalkboard or whatever it was, the market board.
Time to cut the Boris.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, you know what's funny though is a lot of, I feel like mainstream music's starting to do that because of the whole Spotify age of it's the average listener for a new song spends 6 seconds deciding whether or not they want to do it. So people that are very streaming focused put the hook at the beginning of the song. And I know it's still the hook the whole time, but it almost is acting as verse one to get you in. So
that's interesting.
Maybe you should coin that term real quick. The
Boris.
And
that's it.
But so the record we're talking about is I Am Become. And we've already kind of gone through a lot of how it's come to be and where you were writing at. And you mentioned that you actually recorded it in your basement.
Yes.
So.
Well, actually, multiple basements.
Multiple garages, all the basements. And was that just for like people's availability purposes, or was it sonically you were trying to get different things, so you're using different locations?
No, it was what happened to be. So I mean, Seattle's expensive, so everyone moves around. There's stuff that is on the album, so if you look at the credits at all on the album, there's a lot of people that have played on this. A lot of them are my family. On the overture, there is an accordion part that my sister Julia played that Ian flew back to Wisconsin to record. So my dad also has kind of a recording studio in his garage, so it wasn't like that hard to do. He just flew there and used his stuff to record everybody. But all my sisters sing on the album, on that song. My dad's playing mandolin on that song as well. So that was one place we recorded, is in my dad's garage. Some of the songs also started out in a van, which was converted to a makeshift studio.
Oh, that's sick.
I have nothing to do with this. This is back in Faintly days before I was part of it at all, but
right,
super awesome. And some of that stuff is actually used, which I don't know how. I think it's used. Maybe Ian's going to listen to this and be like, no, we threw it all out. But I'm pretty sure we used some of that. And then, so we also lived in West Seattle for a little bit. We built a studio, makeshift studio in that basement. And now Ian and I and his wife live in Ballard. And we have a basement there that we built a makeshift studio out. This one's actually nice. Like, we bought like carpet tiles and stuff and like it really comfortable down there, which is nice. All the other ones were like disgusting basements and stuff. But yeah, so I guess that's four spots. Oh, there was also a house up in Northgate that they lived in that I assume they had to have recorded in. They had to have.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming it's five different spots.
So how did you soundproof things then, or did you?
Well, nothing's soundproofed.
How did you block out sounds? Were you like putting up mattresses around drum sets, or how are you managing that?
So we have a lot of live sounds in the album, even though it's kind of like produced a lot. You probably don't hear a lot of that stuff. We did put foam like on the windows that were in the basement and like put a soundboard from the outside and just screwed it into the side of the house. So that's mainly for our neighbors. We didn't want to annoy them, right. Which we have awesome neighbors, thankfully, that are super cool and they don't care at all when we play late or anything. But other than that, we carpeted the floor. We have a really thin rug that we bought for like $15, like Home Depot or something, just like on one of the walls. And that's concrete on the other wall, which is, sounds terrible, like you would think,
right.
But it's not that bad. And nice. Like we clapped a little bit to like see what the echo was, and that was it, basically. I mean, it could be better, but it worked.
Well, natural reverb.
Yeah, exactly. There's a little bit of that in everything, I'm sure. Yeah. So.
Cool. And so you also did a live EP recently, piano vocals.
Live recording. Ian then brought in the Pro Tools and just make sure levels are right and everything, mm-hmm. but like that's it. There was no mass production or anything.
So what inspired you guys to do that then? Because you had obviously had the record last summer,
right?
And then pretty recently that EP came out.
So Ian always wanted to do it, and that was up at Icicle Creek.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys, people listening, you guys, no one's in here, but yeah, people listening. If you don't know what that is, Icicle Creek is awesome. There's a bunch of cabins up by like Leavenworth, and I think they're like $100 or something for a night.
Oh, what?
And there's a grand piano in one of them that you can just use, and they like it's, I believe, owned by the people who own the news station here. What is it? K5? Is that right? K5 News? Is that right?
K5.
Yeah. That. I think it's owned by them, so they have, like, money, and they want to, like, help support the arts. And there's, like, concerts up there all the time.
Cool.
It's cool. Like, if you want to get away with your band to record something, do it. So Ian built, like, this small rig that's just, like, an interface and his laptop. We brought that up, hooked everything up to the grand piano, and then he just played and recorded it all, which was, like, 4 songs, I think. Super cool. Good way to get away. Totally recommend it. The reason we did it, I think Ian just wanted to.
Yeah, just because.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I actually wasn't familiar with that until you brought it up.
Place is awesome.
That sounds like an amazing just getaway. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, like you said.
Totally.
You
don't have to bring your band. It's like $100. Who cares? Like, it's rent the cabin. Stay up there. It's not expensive. It's fine.
Yeah. And is it... So do you bring your own rig? They just have instruments in all these rooms kind of thing? Is that what it is?
They're set up to sound good. The rooms are.
Oh, cool.
They don't have instruments in all the rooms. There's one room. Well, there's 2 rooms that have a grand piano. Well, one of them's like a performance hall. I don't know if you can use that one. But there's definitely one that's like they're all like triangles and shit. So they don't have parallel walls or anything. Like they're nice sounding rooms. That you can go in, they're relatively big, and those are like, you don't sleep in those. There's like cabins on the side, but then you can just go there and mark your time or whatever and go in. And it's really nice. And when we were there, there was like 2 people maybe at the whole place.
Yeah. What time of year did you go do that? Cause I'm going to probably piggyback on your plan. And
it's a good question.
Do it myself.
Want to say like October? I can find out for you.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of like, that sounds nice if I want to get away and record some stuff for a week, and it's like a quiet time there.
Yeah,
I guess that would make sense. In the winter, nobody's thinking, let's go rent a cabin.
Yeah, exactly.
In the cold.
I mean, it might have been August. I don't know, but yeah. it's cool. Definitely cool. Recommend it.
And then on top of that, you guys had a tour. That you did back in February. So do you mind diving into that? Like, I'll let you give a synopsis, and would just love to hear kind of what process y'all went through and
sure.
for folks who are thinking about going on tour, like what things they should know, whether it's just from a personal standpoint or business standpoint, mm-hmm. like how to get ready for that?
I mean, we learned a lot, obviously, doing this, and that's one of the main reasons we did it. We had never gone on tour ever. We played Tacoma twice, maybe. I don't even know. Which is really sad. Like, we need to get up to Bellingham and Vancouver and everything. We just haven't. I don't even know why. It's really pathetic. But we wanted to do a West Coast tour. We all know people in LA. We know the ever so Android people. I know people I used to work with. I know all my sister's old friends. I have a few friends there. So, like, it was an easy, all right, we can go there. And if anything happens, we have places to stay, like, whatever. We had decided, I think in November of this last year, that we were just going to do it. So we picked dates of what week can we take off. We took off, and then Ian started just hammering clubs. Like, okay, where can we get a show? I'm pretty sure not a single place in Portland wrote us back. Pretty positive.
What? Yeah. You'd think that with the Northwest, they'd be like, oh, okay, at least they're close.
I've heard a lot of people say that it's hard to get shows in Portland. Like, I don't know if really? You played it, but we played one show in Portland, actually, a long time ago, but that was a friend of ours got us the show. Like, we didn't try to get it.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know. You would think it'd be easy, but...
Yeah, I like, in my mind, I'm like, I, coming from a complete place of ignorance, would be thinking it'd be easier to get a show in Portland than it would LA.
Super easy.
Yeah?
It was the easy... That actually was the first show we booked, was LA. So we booked that to be in the middle. So we...
So it's kind of like the middle
Wednesday,
anchor.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the anchor. And we wrote Hotel Cafe, and they wrote us back like the next day, like, yeah, you can play this night. I'm like, okay.
Cool.
Yeah. Like, it's super, it's easier than any Seattle venue. Like, it was the easiest show we've ever booked. They were super helpful, like, super cool. Again, we talked to the ever so Android people. If you guys are listening to this, you need to know who Ever So Android are. They're awesome. They're from Seattle. They moved to LA a few years ago. So Hope and Drew, like, hooked us up with this other dude, Daniel Crook, who was a friend of theirs, to jump on the bill with us. And then our friend Ilya, I don't even know how to say this dude's name, which is really sad. That's who he goes by, and he's from Seattle as well.
Oh,
but
nice.
He moved to, I believe, San Diego. He might be in LA, but I think it's San Diego.
He came up.
Yeah, exactly. He actually played our album release show at Numo's. What's under Numo's?
Barboza,
thank you. So yeah, that was the first show we booked. And then Ian booked a show in San Francisco. I am spacing on all the names of these clubs.
No, that's cool.
I feel bad about it.
No, so it sounds like it was got the LA show and then just hitting the pavement of,
exactly,
we want a show, here's when we're coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm assuming it was just then the venues then that you're reaching out to directly.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, reaching out directly to venues. And we ended up booking, I think, 3 shows. That was it. We booked Tacoma, San Francisco, and LA. And we're like, well, this tour sucks. We're going to do it anyways. Like, yeah, so then we ended up, like, we drove down to Tacoma to play the show. And that show went fine. That, I believe, was the first show with our, yeah, it was. It was the first show with our drummer now, was the first show of the tour, which is crazy that he jumped on board.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'll take a tour. Like, that's awesome. Patrick Brockwell, by the way, he's a really good drummer, young kid. He's awesome. I think he also plays in, like, this, like, Latin band and, like, casinos, like, Make Money, which is awesome. Works at Starbucks, too. But... yeah, so he jumped on and went on tour with us. And so we played the Tacoma show. And then we were going to... oh, we did book another show. Yeah. Okay, now I'm remembering stuff. So we booked a show in Sacramento at... it's a boys and girls club. It was the Orange something.
And so this is February, right? So it's just a week, mm-hmm. in February, and you guys just hit the road.
Yeah.
Took off.
Yeah, end of February. Cool. Yeah, we ended up booking a show in Sacramento at the Something Orange, like the Silver Orange. The Silver Orange, I think that's right. Which was like a boys and girls club, which is weird, but we're like, all right, they have music, let's play it. And we were driving and snowstorms like the whole time. It's like the worst snowstorm we've had in probably Seattle for like as long as I lived here. It was just terrible. Although it wasn't Seattle, I guess it was like more Oregon. So we finally got to then Portland, stayed with a friend in Portland for like 2 hours. Like we just crashed for 2 hours, got up and then left, went to Sacramento. And by the time we got into the Sacramento area, our van just wasn't working.
Oh,
like
no.
It was like things were just dying. Like the lights stopped working. And we're like, we don't know if we're going to make it. We called the place we're supposed to play. We're like, we have no idea what's going on. Like, we're sorry. We might not make it. It's like, no problem. Like, no worries. We ended up pulling into their parking lot with no lights and just like cruising. And this is at like, I don't know, 9 at night, right? So it's just like cruising, hoping to make it because our car is just like jiggling down the fucking highway. We pull in, load all our stuff, play the show, load it all back into our van, and then slept in their parking lot in our van because we built a bed in the van too, which is really nice. The next day, we charged our battery and then drove to AutoZone to figure out what the hell was going on. Kind of figured it out. It was the alternator. And then spent 5 hours in their parking lot changing it without having any idea how to do that. So we did it, and it worked.
Oh, that's good.
And then we made it to San Francisco, where we had a show that night and played it. So it all worked out.
That's crazy. Was this just like a rental then? Rented a van and took it off?
I've spent like 11, 12 grand on a van in December. Like I bought it. So I work from home. Mm-hmm. I have two cars right now. One car is in pieces in my garage, and I bought for like $3,000 or something. It's a 79 Civic. Like I'm gonna rebuild this thing and make it cool. And I have that van, and I don't drive ever. So I was like, well, I don't have a car payment. It's gonna be $200 a month. I can afford that. I'll just buy a van. I can resell that thing for like probably the same amount that I bought it for. It's a nice van. Didn't think anything was gonna really happen to it, and it just
Murphy's Law. Oh,
dude, I know.
Anything that can will.
Yeah.
So that's nuts. So you make it to San Francisco, obviously, and mm-hmm. was the rest of the tour smooth as far as travel goes? Or
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, I got a parking ticket, but whatever. I mean, $50 or something, that's fine.
So how are you promoting these shows then? Because you had the friends in LA, so you had some connects mm-hmm. there. But right. when you have your Sacramento and San Francisco, how do you go about going, okay, we're going on tour?
The Sacramento show, we didn't have to promote, really. It was an open mic. It really was what it was. It was a Boys and Girls Club open mic.
Cool.
The San Francisco show, we actually also played with a band, the Kevin Connors band, who Ian had known because he took like a small solo trip back in like November, I think, actually, just to play a couple shows. Just to get like the feet wet, see what it was. So he went down to San Francisco and back, and he played a show with Kevin. And then they jumped on the bill. So then they were promoting some stuff, and it actually, I believe, was their album release show too. So that was nice.
Oh, right on.
That there was some extra people there that probably normally wouldn't be. And then Instagram, that's it. I mean, we didn't do a lot of it. Also in LA, we promoted that. I have enough friends down in LA that I just told friends, and I would get as many people in that city to come to a show as I would here. Just be like, guys, come to the show. Say hi to me. You haven't seen me in like 7 years.
And I'm yeah. Okay.
But also Hotel Cafe is really interesting, and you should play there if you do another tour. They do everything kind of like a festival. They have two stages. They have a big room and a small room. We played the small room, and there was six bands, I think, that played that night.
Dang.
And it's super professional. You get on stage, you play your shit, you get off, you have like 5 minutes. Like 5 minutes to get off.
Okay, wow.
You don't bring your stuff like into the building really at all. I mean, you can. There's like tiny room, but like not everyone gets to do that right away.
Six bands worth.
And everyone runs it real quick. So that was nice. And they have so many bands that play it that it's, especially we played on a weekday, people are there and it's also easy to get a gig there, or relatively easy. I mean, it was easy for us. It might have been luck of the draw or whatever. My friend Trevor, who lives in LA, the next day was like, I think you guys need to play another show here. Like, if I can get you a show, will you do it? We're like, okay.
we're here.
Yeah, like, why not? And then he called up some people at the Whiskey Go-Go and got us a show there.
What?
So it was like, there was like a day in between of nothing.
You mentioned it was like a Wednesday or something.
Friday we played Whiskey.
Oh, Friday at the...
Yeah. We played that. We didn't have to really promote that either. Like, they kind of said we didn't really have to promote it. They're like, sell like 20 tickets and then you're good. And Trevor's like, they can't do that. And they're like, all right, well, like 10? Like, and they're like, all right, what? I mean, 10's fine. There was other bands playing that are pulling people, obviously, and we just got thrown on their bill. I don't know how they felt about it, which is a little weird, but we opened up. It wasn't that crazy. And actually what happened, when we were playing, we were supposed to play 30 minutes, and then at the end of, like, the second song, the sound guy's like, play another one. I'm like, okay, like, what song should we play? And so I don't know what it was, but we played some other song, and then he's like, play another one. I'm like, what's going on? So we played another song.
Keep going.
I think we played like three more songs, like in total, after our set. We get off the stage, and dudes are like, you guys are really good, and another band dropped out, so we just wanted to fill the time, and we didn't want one of the other bands to do it. Oh. Like, all right, sounds awesome.
That's sweet. Yeah, you don't get that often. Normally you're getting the...
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so was it like a decent turnout then? Like, did you get to see new people and...
Yeah, everyone, almost everybody there, I had no idea who they were, which is
awesome.
Great. And it was definitely decent.
Yeah. That's sweet, though, and not a bad venue to have on your band resume.
No, exactly.
We played the whiskey on a Friday
LA. I got some photos out of it, which are good, with like the whiskey behind us, which, by the way, you're not supposed to do.
Oh, really?
So in LA, a lot of clubs like charge you to take photos. It's the weirdest thing.
What?
Like, they somehow own like their claim or whatever.
Is it the trademark or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Exactly.
So it's like a licensing thing?
It's something weird like that.
What?
It's so weird.
I would have had no idea. That's something...
Yeah.
Yeah. That blows my... I can't imagine playing like a Crocodile or a Numos or...
I know,
Barbosa,
right?
And them going, yeah, you can't take photos.
That's crazy. How do you want me to promote my band when I'm playing your venue next time?
Right, exactly. Here's a photo of the last time we got ready to go inside.
Yeah. So weird.
But, like, oh, man. That's a pretty neat experience, though. And then from there, was it just drive back?
Actually, no. So I believe one of the bookers at the Whiskey asked us to play a show the next day at the Vampire Lounge, and that's a weird place. It's cool, but so we got there, it was like a midday show at like 3, and we're like, I mean, I guess we'll do that and then drive back, like, mm-hmm. same day, we'll just do it. We got there and it's like a tiny wine bar that's like super fancy in Beverly Hills. We're like, I don't know if this is right. It's really weird. This place, you can tell, has a ton of money. I believe their website is vampire.com. I'm almost positive, which, if you know anything about domains, that's expensive.
Jeez.
Like, that is a name. But so we got there and we had decided then, like, let's not do a full band thing. Let's just have Ian play this, because it just doesn't make sense. Like, we're going to blow their windows out. Like, there's no way this is going to work, which is fine. Like, he's done that a million times. It's a totally different vibe. It's cool.
Ended up turning into quite the tour. They're going from 3 shows to, what, 6?
Something like that.
Or something? Yeah. That's awesome, though. I mean, it just shows if you hit the pavement, stuff will happen.
Exactly. Kind of thing. Just be open to it, for sure.
Zipping back up to Seattle here, how do you guys go about booking shows, what do you look for, and how do you go about promoting it? Because like you'd mentioned, in some cases it's, you know, you're just rallying all your friends to come out, but how do you continue to grow and go about trying to get more people to your shows?
Dude, it's hard, man. That is the hardest question ever. Yeah. Besides, what does your band sound like, which is a way harder question. We're really lucky in having a lot of friends that are just, they come to every show. Like, I know they don't want to be there. Like, they're so nice. They pay for it. Like, I try to every once in a while, like, put one of them on the list. Like, I'll move it around. Like, okay, like, Ilsa and Steph will be on the list next time or whatever. Like, because they come to every fucking show. But also, like, they all tell people. Like, all the people that come to our shows tell other people to come to the shows. My girlfriend's amazing and brings, like, 10 people every time. Half of them I've never met. I'm like, how do you know them? Like, yeah. I've known you for a long time now. I don't understand how we've never met.
Yeah.
But other than, I mean, just, I guess, booking. Ian does all the booking. He's writing every venue. Partly that is because he's done it for so long that he kind of knows some of the people who are booking. The other thing is that he has like a way of talking an email that's vastly different than mine. I am short, to the point. There is no fluff, and it probably comes off bad. Where he is a little bit more fluffy and like, hey, we want to play your venue. It sounds great, blah, 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 whatever. I don't know, a little bit more salesy, even though it doesn't have to be half the time because he knows them, but that's just a better reception for sure.
Yeah, softer landing.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, he does like all the booking for sure. However, lately it's been people asking us to play, which is nice.
That's exciting.
It's a nice turn of events.
Yeah.
We played a great show at Crocodile. Not great because we were great, but just the lineup was ridiculous. It was Ever So Android and Monster Watch and Flirt, and that was such a good night. Like, there were so many people there. Monster Watch destroys. Have you seen them?
I have not, but you,
dude,
you
messaged
me and you're like, you have to pay attention to these
folks. So, like, they're intense, and it's not music I would normally listen to. Like, it's kind of Seattle grungy stuff. They do it really well, and I really like their music. If I wouldn't have, like, just seen them live, I wouldn't be listening to it.
Yeah.
But the fact that I saw them live, I'm like, now I listen to them all the time. Like, I know what it is, and they're so good. There's a lot of good bands.
That's awesome.
Around right now.
So who are some other bands? I know when we were going back and forth, you had a couple people you were excited about. Monster Watch was one of them.
You mentioned
Ever So Android a few times. Mm-hmm. Who are you excited about?
So there's a band called, that used to be called Crystal Desert, that I saw at last year's Downstream Fest that T-Bossa puts on over at Substation over in Freelard or Fremont or Ballard, whatever you want to call it over there. I walked in. I didn't know who they were. I walked in. They blew me away. They were incredible. A week later, maybe 2 weeks or something, I saw a Facebook post by them that said they broke up. I was like, oh my God, that's so sad. Like, these guys are really good. Like, they definitely had something. And just like a month ago, I just posted on Facebook, like, oh, I'm really sad that these guys broke up. And then they commented on it, and like, we did, but we have a new band, and it's called Bad Optics. Listen to their stuff. And it was amazing. I'm like, all
nice,
right,
there you,
like,
go.
This is cool. So yeah, Bad Optics. I'm pumped about Bad Optics.
Write that down.
Do it for sure. They're awesome.
And what we do too is for every episode, we'll put together a playlist on Spotify of all the people we talk about.
Nice.
So it's a cool way to discover some new stuff. So we'll be sure to plug all these folks.
Sweet. Do you know anything about Bastion Fog?
No.
Dude, it's so good. Like, another one had a band. He had some band, and I don't remember the name of that either. However, they were amazing, and then again broke up. And then he had some play with that band. I think KXB liked him a little bit, so he had somewhat of a following. And then just started this new band, Belgian Fog, and I saw them play at the Bands in Town thing, the TV show on Public Access. Mm-hmm. With Dirty Dirty, because I went to go see Dirty Dirty there.
Nice.
And support them. And Belgian Fog played, and I knew what they sounded like, and then they blew me away live. I was like, god damn it, man. They write such interesting music. Like, it's not Seattle music.
Right.
I mean, that sounds bad too, but
well, so like,
you know
like
what
how,
I mean?
Like, how like, so? Just like,
it's just not grungy. Like, not, right. It's not that dirtiness. It's a little 80s, but super well written pop and not like annoying or over the top. Like, kind of like Keen. Do you know Keen at all?
Mm-mm.
A band from England. A little bit like that, but even more intricate, I would say.
Cool.
Really good. I mean, dude, I don't know, man.
Yeah. Stuff, no, but... that's perfect. That's a lot more than I normally get out of folks.
Yeah.
So last question I have for you is this venue that you want to open. You mentioned that that's like your goal by 2020. What's kind of your vision?
2020.
What's kind of your vision for this thing?
I mean, we got a lot of ideas. I don't want to throw too much out there because we might steal some shit.
No.
But
even if it's just a little tease, like what made you want to do that?
It's something I've wanted to do for a really long time for some reason. I never actually saw myself as a musician. I still don't. I'm not a fucking musician. I play music in a band, but like I'm not the one that would do that. I can't do that in any other band. There's no way I would be in any other band ever. People would be like, you don't know how to play guitar. I'm like, I know. Sorry. But yeah, so I grew up with music, obviously. And I don't know, for some reason, I've always kind of wanted to open up that. I like bars. It's one of my favorite things to do is go sit at a bar and talk to bartenders as therapy. I don't know. I'm always in bars, like probably 3-4 nights a week. I don't like drink a ton, but I'll have like a beer that night and just hang out at the bar. So I like that vibe a lot. And oddly enough, my girlfriend Diane used to work in bars. And also has wanted to open up a venue. So we were talking like, we should do this. Like, we're pretty cool in the way that like, we're super open about every weird thing in our relationship. So if anything were to happen where we would break up or whatever, I don't think it'd be an issue. Like, you'd just be like, okay, well now we run the venue. Who cares?
Yeah.
That's how it works now. I mean, they're saying that now, but like, I feel like that's actually true.
Yeah.
So the idea is to do that together. We also have a few different like bartenders that we already want to like bring on board. We've searched out different venues for it, met with a few different people, like people selling different buildings or renting them out or whatever. And yeah, I mean, it's like I don't know how much to say about it, but that is the goal to do that.
Yeah, that's super cool.
I guess kind of the vision is to not just have it a music venue.
Yeah.
Is like, to have it a place people want to go to as a bar. And that way people go there anyways and see music. So the bands hopefully don't have to promote, because you can't promote stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be a better way to do it. Like, that's always the question, like you just asked earlier. How do you get new people to the show? Can you? I mean, people have to hear your stuff and like it and come, but like, you putting anything out on Instagram isn't going to do that. Like, I mean, it might one in 3 years, but I don't know. Hopefully we can build a community that just goes to that venue, because every Saturday night or Friday night, there's going to be a show and it's going to be good music. It's not just going to be whoever. That's the goal.
That's awesome. It's like a cool mission statement of like, we're going to make this good. And it's going to be community and
yeah. Speaking of venues, by the way, have you been to the Clockout Lounge?
No, you mentioned that.
This is awesome.
Today. Yeah. I was looking it up. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? You seem pretty,
I mean, I know a little bit about it, but not a whole lot. Yeah, the sound guy's great. I don't know his name. Didn't talk to him or anything, but he clearly knows what he's doing. They have beer that's not terrible. Like, how many times can you say that at a venue? Like,
right.
Everything I got from that is good. We haven't played there, so I don't know how it is like dealing with them or anything, but mm-hmm. I'm a fan.
Cool. So. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. And as you've got stuff coming up for projects or shows, keep us posted. And
sure. I'm
really excited to see what's next for y'all. And thanks again for doing this. Really appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
It's great to talk with you.
Absolutely, man.
That was Lure by Among Authors. This is a huge week for them. They have an in-studio performance at KEXP this Friday, August 24th at 3 p.m. So be sure to tune in there at 90.3 FM. The following night, they're going to be playing The Crocodile, supporting Ever So Android, who we talked about quite a bit, for their EP release show. So go ahead and grab your tickets, and we will see you there. And if you want to listen to the artists that we've been discussing during these episodes, follow Made for Music on Spotify, as we're actually going to be putting together playlists comprised of the songs that we discuss on both the local and national level. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please go ahead and rate us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. We really appreciate y'all helping us out there, and we will see you next time.